arm and looked. It's amazing how much lethal stuff people keep in their bathroom cabinets. Almost everything has hazardous warning labels, yelling poison, caustic agent, if accidental contact with eyes, flush with water immediately. But there was a pile of big fluffy towels, and I had Deuce's handgun. Homemade silencer. But I was going to have to hold the gun at about waist level, close into my body, to keep the towels tight enough to act as a muffler. Holding the gun that way meant I'd want to get in close before I fired. If Blade were as good as the rest of them, he'd have his gun close. I'd only get one shot, and it had to count. How do you get that close to a well-armed man? Answer: take off some clothes. I took off the t-shirt and the vest. It wouldn't stop a knife, and the idea was that he wouldn't get a shot off, right? Besides, I was trying for romance, or at least lust. Kevlar just lacks that certain something. I kept the bra. My nerves weren't that good. Besides, if he demanded I take some clothes off, it left me something besides my pants. It was like playing strip poker. More clothes give you more to work with. The shower went off. Shit. My time had just run out. My heart was suddenly in my throat. But I had to get in there before he came out here. If he saw the body, it wasn't rape I had to worry about. I tucked the gun down the front of my pants, towels clutched to my chest and stomach, and opened the door. I closed the door with me leaning against it. Blade looked up. His dark skin was beaded with water, and Deuce had been right. Blade stripped real pretty. Under other circumstances, it would have been a pleasure to see him. Now, I was so scared I was having trouble breathing. He reached for the gun that had been propped against the tub. His knife sheaths were draped across the back towel rack like you'd hang a wash rag, to keep them dry but handy. He stopped in mid-motion, fingers trailing on the gun.
What do you want?
Deuce said to bring you towels. I let the fear slide into my voice, making it breathy.
How'd he get you to strip down?
I looked down, an embarrassed head bob. He gave me a choice of him or you? Blade laughed, and it was a purely masculine sound.
He shows Deuce?
I nodded. I didn't have to pretend to be embarrassed. I just didn't try and hide it.
Take off the bra.
He straightened up, hand going farther away from the big gun, but still too close to the knives and his handgun on the towel rack. I slid out of the straps and pressed the towels to my chest, reached back and undid the snaps. I lifted the towels away from my body just enough to pull the bra out and let it fall to the floor. I kept the towels tight against me, for modesty's sake, and to hide the gun in my waistband. He stepped out of the tub and started to take those three steps that would close the distance. I turned my body sort of sideways, getting the gun out, still held behind the towels. He was right in front of me, three steps away from all his weapons. He curled his fingers over the top of the towel and pushed them lower, exposing my breasts an inch at a time. He was less than 10 inches away from me. His hand stroked the upper mound of my breast, and I fired. His body jerked, and I think he said, "Fuck." I kept pulling the trigger until he collapsed to his knees, eyes rolled back. His stomach and lower chest were a red ruin. The towels were shredded and covered in black powder stains. The shots had been muffled, but not silenced. I waited there in the small room, the shots seeming to echo in the walls. I waited for cries of alarm. Nothing. I picked up my bra, but didn't take time to put it on before I opened the connecting door and listened. Silence. Great. I got dressed and took all the weapons. Blade's handgun was a Heckler & Koch. Nice gun. I tucked it in the front of my pants where the Firestar would have normally gone. I put both the big guns over the same shoulder and the knife sheaths I draped over the other shoulder. I brought the subgun around, clicked the safety off, and I was as ready as I was going to be. The last time I'd seen Edward, he'd been on his knees. His two guards had been standing. If I was careful and the gun didn't kick too much, I could take them out over Edward's head. My plan was to spray the room. As plans went, it was crude, and secrecy would be very lost if we were within hearing of anyone. But once I knew the noise wasn't going to get Edward killed, I didn't care as much. They'd have killed Edward because he was a threat, and they'd want to take out the threat at their back before turning to face a new threat. The kids weren't a threat. If Riker was dead and couldn't give the order to hurt them, then they'd be okay until we reached them. That was the theory, and it was the best one I had. Bristling with weapons, I listened at the outer door. Nothing. I opened it just a little. The hallway was empty. Better. I locked the door behind me so that when I shut it, people might assume it was occupied by more than dead people. The knives moved too much slung over my shoulder, so I set them down in a pile against the wall, being as quiet as I could. The corridor that had seemed so long now seemed short because this was one of those plans that was either going to work really well or be a total disaster. In less than 2 minutes, I'd be at the door, and we'd see. Chapter 58. The gun had a short stock, but I braced it against my shoulder, and my arms were short enough that it was probably easier for me than the men I took them off. I was only steps from the open study door. Voices came out into the hallway. "What do you mean that Antonio and Bandit are missing?" That was Riker. "I thought your men were good, Simon." Shit. Was Simon back in the room? It didn't matter. It didn't change the plan. But I'd have preferred that Simon be elsewhere, at least until Edward was safe and armed. But Simon's voice came tinny and staticky. It was the intercom system. Shit, I didn't want them to hear the shots. The best I could do was wait until I didn't hear him using it. The longer I lurked in the hallway, the less chance the plan had. Someone was going to come up the stairs or out of the room or out of the study. If I lost surprise, it was over. I was scared. Really scared. Not about killing or being killed, but about accidentally shooting Edward. I had an unfamiliar submachine gun in my hands. I'd never even seen one like this used. If you aim too high with a machine gun, more the full machine guns, but the subs too, you can actually miss. If I fired into that room and missed everyone, I guess I deserved to get shot. I took the last deep breath and eased around the doorframe. I know people always stand in the middle of the freaking door in the movies, but that's a good way to get killed. Use cover when you have it. I had a split second to see the room. Rooster and Shooter had Edward covered, still on his knees. Ilario the Witch had moved beside Riker's desk. I started firing almost before I'd finished looking. The sound was enormous, but the gun had almost no recoil. I had to adjust my aim because I'd been expecting to have to fight the gun, but it was smooth for a subgun. Shooter actually got a burst off, but it was angled wrong and took out the ceiling above me. Rooster turned, but that was it. Seconds for both of them to go down. Seconds to move the gun in a continuous spray that took out the control panels and monitors, and Riker, sitting behind his desk. Ilario was the farthest away, and he had time to dive to the floor. I went for the floor too, hitting on my stomach as I aimed for him. I was angled away from Edward. I didn't have to be careful. I kept the trigger down and hit Ilario before he could get a shot off. His body danced with a slap of bullets. There was something fascinating about the way the bullets shredded him. Or maybe I just couldn't let go of the trigger. I caught movement out of the corner of my eye and rolled on one shoulder, gun pointed. I let off the trigger just in time. Edward was kneeling with a gun in his hands by the bodies of his guards. He had a hand out as if to ward off the bullets, as if he hadn't been sure I'd remembered in time. We stayed that way for a frozen second. Me on my side, the subgun pointed at him, finger still on the trigger but not pressing down. Him, with his hand out, the automatic pistol in his hand but pointed down. His mouth moved, but I couldn't hear him. Part shock, adrenaline, and part firing a submachine gun without ear protection in a closed room. I eased to a kneeling position and stopped pointing the gun at him. He seemed to realize I was having trouble hearing because he held up two fingers and did thumbs down. Rooster and Shooter were dead. Hurrah. I knew Ilario was dead. I'd gone way overboard on him. I looked across the room at Riker. He was sitting in his chair, mouth gaping open and closed like a landed fish. The front of his nice white shirt and suit jacket were stained red in a row across the entire front of his body, including his arms. He was sitting so that I could see his hands clearly. I don't know if the force of the shots had pushed the wheelchair back, or he'd started that way. Edward pointed at Riker, and I heard one word of the sentence. Guard. He wanted me to guard Riker, not kill him. Of course, we needed to know where the children were being held. I hoped he didn't die before he told us. My hearing came back in stages. I could hear Riker saying, "Please, don't." It was what Peter had been saying on the monitor. It pleased me that Riker was begging. Edward came back from checking the hallway. He had one of the subguns in his hands. He'd closed the door so that if we had company, we'd get a little warning. By the time he started asking Riker questions, I could hear, but there was a ringing echo in my head that didn't seem to want to go away. "Tell me where to find Becca and Peter," Edward said. He was leaning on the back of Riker's chair, face very close to his. Riker rolled his eyes to look at him. There was bloody foam at his lips. I'd pierced at least one lung. If it had been both, he was dying. If only one, then maybe he could survive if he got to the hospital soon enough.
"Please,"
he managed to say again.
"Tell me where the children are being kept, and I'll let Anita call an ambulance."
"Promise?"
he said, in a voice thick with things that should never be in a throat.
"I promise, just like you promised me," Edward said.
Either Riker didn't get the double entendre, or he didn't want to. People will believe a lot of things when they're afraid they're dying. He believed we'd call an ambulance because he gave directions in that thick, wet voice. He told us where they were being held.
"Thank you," Edward said.
"Call now,"
Riker said. Edward put his face almost next to Riker's.
"You want to be safe from the monster?"
Riker swallowed, coughed blood, and nodded.
"I'll keep you safe from the monster. I'll keep you safe from everything."
And he shot Riker in the head with the Beretta 9mm he'd reclaimed from Rooster's body. My guns were still on Mickey somewhere out there. Edward felt for Riker's pulse and didn't find it. He looked at me across the man's body. I'd always thought Edward killed with coldness, but his baby blues held a fine, heated rage, like a forest fire barely under control. He was still in control of himself, but for the first time I wondered if there would come a point tonight where he'd lose it. You can only stay cool and collected when things don't matter. And Peter and Becca mattered to Edward. They mattered more than I'd have ever thought anyone would matter to him. Them and Donna. His family. He told me to reload the subgun. I did what he asked. If Edward said I'd nearly emptied an entire clip in just a few seconds, I believed him. I added the extra clip from the dead man to the purse. Edward went for the door, and I followed him. I'd thought that nothing could be scarier than Edward at his most cold. I was wrong. Edward the family man was downright terrifying. Chapter 59. Hours later, though my watch said 30 minutes, I was plastered to a wall, crouched as low as I could get, trying not to get shot. I knew that I originally started out to rescue the kids, and I still planned to do that, but my immediate plan was just to avoid catching a bullet. That had been the plan for about 5 minutes. I'd heard the expression, a hail of bullets, but I'd really never understood what it meant. It was as if the very air had turned into a moving, spattering thing where tiny, fast-moving objects peppered the air around you, bit into the solid rock wall beyond and left holes. There were two submachine guns down the hall, pinning us in crossfire. I'd never been shot at by fully automatic machine guns before. I was so impressed I hadn't done anything in the last 5 minutes except hug the wall and keep my head down. The secret panel had been exactly where Riker said it would be. Edward had killed the guard on the other side with a knife, quick, efficient. We'd killed two more men before Simon and his crew, or what was left of it, found us and started fighting back. I thought I was good at killing people. I'd thought I was good in a gunfight. I was wrong. If what was happening to me now was a gunfight, then I'd never been in one before. I'd shot people and been shot, but that had been one-on-one with semi-auto pistols. The bullets whined by me in a near constant stream of noise and percussion. I was so not putting my face out there. It was pure luck that I hadn't been shot before we got this far. The only thing I'd been doing right that had helped my chances was using every freaking bit of cover offered. The one comfort to my newfound cowardice was that Edward was crouched with me, though he kept peeking around the corner and firing short bursts at the shooters that had us pinned. He reached around me, firing. I could feel the vibration of the gun against my body, the tremble of his arms as he held it. He darted back behind the wall, and a fresh burst of bullets thundered down at us. Edward held his hand out, and I handed him another clip from the purse. I felt like a surgical nurse. I leaned close to Edward's ear and whisper screamed,
"You want the vest? I'm not using it."
"I've got a vest on."
Deuce had kindly left Edward's vest in the study.
"You could put mine on your head," I said.
He actually smiled at me as if I'd been joking. He motioned for me to scoot over, an acknowledgement from both of us that I wasn't doing much. He took up my post at the corner of the wall, and I flattened my back where he'd been. He went to his belly, firing around the corner. It only took seconds for him to peek around the corner, fire, and come back. But while he was staring down the corridor, I saw the tiniest corner of a head peek round the bend of the stairs just above us. The head ducked back out of sight. I started to touch Edward, to let him know we had company, when something came sailing through the air. Something small and roundish. I don't remember thinking about it. I was just on my knees, letting the subgun dangle. I caught the object in my hands and threw it back up the stairs before my brain even had time to form the word grenade. I threw myself back to the floor, touching Edward's leg, and then there was an explosion. The world shuddered, and the stairway collapsed in a shower of rock and dust. Rock rained down on my arms where I'd curled them over my head. I thought that if the bad guys came running down the hall now, I wouldn't be much help, which made me raise my head enough to see the coroner and Edward. He had his head covered by one arm, but was looking round the corner, gun in one hand. Of course, nothing would make Edward forget the bad guys. Certainly not a little thing like an explosion and the ceiling about to come down on us. The silence came gradually, full of creaks and groans from the stones around us. The dust lay like a thin mist in the air. I started to cough, and Edward's hand was just suddenly on my mouth. How had he known? He gave a small shake of his head. I got the idea that he wanted me to be quiet, but I didn't know why. Of course, I didn't need to know. We lay quiet, and the silence seemed to build. Finally, I heard the first scrape of a footstep coming down the hall. I tensed, and Edward's hand pressed on my shoulder. "Easy," he was saying. "Easy." I swallowed as quietly as I could and tried to relax. Quiet, I could do. Relaxed was not happening. The movements were stealthy, very quiet. Someone was creeping down the hallway towards us, wondering if we'd gotten blown up. We were pretending that we had, but once the man got down here, the jig would be up. We could kill him, but there was another man at the end of the hall. If he didn't run out of ammo, he could hold the hall against us. He didn't want to come to us, and we needed to go down that hall. Becca and Peter were in cells in the hall. The bad guys had the upper hand because we needed to move forward, and all they needed to do was hold position. Of course, one of them was coming to us. Edward pantomimed for me to go forward and lie down. I knew he wanted me to play dead, but that far out from the wall was kill zone. If they started firing, even flat on the ground, I might be hit. But I crawled forward through the debris, being very, very careful not to scrape any weapons or the purse against the floor or make the rocks roll. I was farther out than I wanted to be when I looked back, and Edward gave one nod. I lay down on the floor quietly. I lay face down because my acting abilities aren't up to playing dead. My hair flung across my face and I left it there, the better to peek through. I kept the subgun in my hand, but Edward shook his head. I let the gun go, moved my hand minutely away from it, and played dead. If Edward were wrong, I wouldn't be playing for long. I'd never get to the gun in time. Once the man cleared the corner, it was over. I lay there and strained to hear movement. Mostly what I heard was the thudding of my heart. Whoever it was being even quieter than before. Maybe he'd chickened out. Maybe he wasn't coming at all and they'd start shooting again. I had to fight to keep still, not to move, not to breathe too much. I willed myself to relax into the floor, and I'd almost succeeded when I caught movement in the hallway. I was far enough out from Edward that I had a better view at the end of the hall. Would he see the shine of my eyes through my hair? I took in a deep breath, closed my eyes, and held it. Either Edward would kill him, or he'd kill me. I trusted Edward. I trusted Edward. I trusted Edward. Noises, soft, slithering noises. The brush of cloth. Then a sharp exhale of breath. Nothing you'd hear from the other end of the hallway. Silence so thick it was frightening, but if Edward hadn't won, there would have been gunfire. I opened my eyes a slit, then wider, because Edward was kneeling over Mickey's body, searching it. I must not have been the only one who thought the silence was a long one because a man's voice sounded.
"Mickey, you okay?"
Edward answered, and it didn't sound like his voice. It wasn't a perfect imitation, but it was good.
"All clear."
"What's the Roger?" the man asked. I didn't recognize the voice. One of Simon's men we had yet to meet face to face. Edward looked at me and shook his head. I didn't know what a Roger was, but apparently we couldn't fake it, though Edward tried.
"Get the fuck down here and help me search the bodies."
The answer to that was gunfire. I was already as low as I could get to the ground, but I tried to get lower. The bullets sprayed over me into the wall beyond, and the only thing that kept me from screaming was pride. Edward gave one abrupt motion. I thought I knew what he wanted. When the shots ended, I belly-crawled back towards the wall. I was actually almost there when he fired again. I froze in place, face to the ground. The firing ended, and I put my back to the wall on the other side of Mickey's body from Edward. Mickey was still carrying my guns. I took them back. Edward had a canister in his hand that looked suspiciously like the incendiary grenade they'd put in my purse, minus the camouflaging hairspray can. My eyes widened. He shook his head as if reading my mind and mouthed, "Smoke." "Okay." He leaned over the body and I leaned into him. He whispered,
"Cover me while I throw it. Belly crawl down the hall. When you see anyone through the smoke, shoot them."
Then he leaned back, pulled the pin on the smoke grenade, and stood with the wall still hiding him. I crawled to him, hugging the wall and his legs, subgun clutched tight. My heart was inside my head, pounding away. I had time to think, gee, the headache's gone. Then Edward said softly,
"Now."
I peeked around the corner, my finger on the trigger, spraying down the hallway. Edward threw the smoke grenade. He jerked back around the corner and so did I. Thick white smoke filled the hallway. I dropped to my belly behind the wall, waiting for the smoke to find me. Edward motioned that he'd take the other side, but he pointed forward for me. He combat crawled and was almost immediately lost to the thick smoke. The smoke was bitter, like burning cotton soaked in something bad. I crawled with the wall on my left, the subgun held out in front of me. I had two guns shoved down the front of my jeans now, and it wasn't comfortable for crawling, but nothing could have persuaded me to stop and adjust them. The purse stayed solid against my back like a bulky backpack. The world had narrowed down to soft, rolling smoke, the feel of the floor under my arms and legs, the brush of the wall against my left elbow when I moved too close to it. There was nothing but me moving down the hall, eyes trying to see anything in the white mass of clouds. Nothing moved but me. Then bullets ripped through the smoke, and I was close enough to see the flash of the gun through the smoke. I was almost on top of him, and he was firing chest high into the smoke. I was about ankle high and looking up at him. I could actually see him like a shadowy figure above me when I pressed the trigger and watched that shadow jerk. I rolled onto my side to sweep my fire line up his body, still afraid to stand or even kneel until I knew he wasn't firing back. He collapsed to his knees, face suddenly looming out of the smoke. I fired nearly point blank into his chest, and he fell backwards, half vanishing in the faded smoke like he'd fallen into clouds. I stayed low and realized I could see his feet. The smoke was almost gone at floor level, which was one of many reasons that Edward had had us crawl.
"It's me,"
Edward said before he crawled out of the smoke. He was wise to have warned me. My finger was still on the trigger, and I was beginning to appreciate how you could accidentally shoot your friends in a combat situation, unless you were very careful. He moved a little way, and the smoke was thinning enough that I could see him check the man's pulse.
"Stay here."
And he was gone into the dying smoke. It pissed me off, but I stayed on the floor by the man I'd killed and waited. I might have been pissed off, but we were in a kind of fighting that I knew almost nothing about. I'd somehow fallen into Edward's other life, and he was better at surviving here than I was. I was going to do what I was told. It was pretty much my only hope for getting out alive. Edward came back, walking instead of crawling. Probably a good sign.
"The area's clear, but it won't be for long."
He held the keys we'd taken from Riker.
"Let's do it."
He unlocked the cell that was supposed to be Peter's and went across the hall to Becca's before he did more than push the door open. I guess I was getting Peter. I dropped to one knee and pushed the door open until it was flat against the wall. See? No one hiding behind it. If there had been someone in the room, they'd have probably shot over my head. Kneeling, I was a lot shorter than most people. But a glance showed the room was empty except for the narrow bed with Peter on it. I stood, debated for a second whether to shut the door and risk someone locking it behind me, or leave it open and risk someone coming up behind me with a gun. I left it open, not because it was the best option, but because I just didn't want the door shut on me in the cell. Part claustrophobia, part just having been locked in too many places waiting for things to eat me. Sometimes I think that last part contributes to the claustrophobia. It had been bad on the black and white monitor, but it was worse in person. Peter was curled into the tightest ball he could manage. His hands tied behind his back, tied ankles tucked up tight to his bare butt. His clothes were still bunched around his knees, and the expanse of pale flesh looked incredibly vulnerable. She'd meant to humiliate him, leaving him like this. The blindfold was still in place, cutting a bright patch of color across his dark hair. His mouth was stained with drying blood, his lower lip already swollen, bruises beginning to spread across his face like ugly lipstick from an overzealous kiss. I didn't try to be quiet. I tried to hurry. He heard me coming because he started talking through the gag. I could understand him.
"Please don't. Please don't,"
He kept saying it over and over in a progressively more frantic voice until his voice broke, not from adolescence, but from fear.
"It's me, Peter," I said.
He didn't seem to hear me, just kept begging over and over. I touched his shoulder, and he screamed,
"Peter, it's Anita!"
I think he stopped breathing for a heartbeat, then he said,
"Anita?"
"Yeah, I'm here to get you out."
He started to cry, thin shoulders shaking. I drew one of Blade's blades and fitted it carefully between his wrists, jerking upward. The cord sliced clean under the sharp, sharp blade.
I tried to lift the blindfold off of him, but it was too tight.
"I'm going to have to cut the blindfold off, Peter. Don't move."
His breathing slowed, and he held still while I slid the blade between the cloth and the side of his head. It was harder to cut than the rope, because it was tighter to his skin and just a bad angle. But the blade finally sliced through it, and the cloth fell away. I had an impression of red marks in his skin where the blindfold had marked him. Then he flung himself on me, hugging me. I hugged him back, knife in one hand.
He whispered, "She said she was going to cut it off when she came back."
He didn't start crying again. He just held on. I rubbed his back with my free hand. I wanted to give him comfort, but we had to get out of here.
"She won't hurt you anymore, Peter. I promise that, but we've got to get out of here."
I pulled back from his desperate arms until I could see his face and he could see mine. I held his face in my hands, the knife carefully pointed up. I looked into his eyes. They were wide and shocky, but there wasn't much I could do about it now.
"Peter, we have to go. Ted's getting Becca, and we're leaving."
Maybe it was his sister's name, but he blinked and gave a small nod.
"I'm okay," he said, which was the best lie I'd heard all night.
But I accepted it and said,
"Good."
I had to stand to reach the ropes at his ankles. He was just that tall, or I was that short. The hug had put him facing forward, and he seemed suddenly aware that he was exposed. He started grabbing at his underwear and pants while I tried to cut his ankles free. I had to pull the knife back.
"If you don't hold still, you're going to end up cut."
"I want my clothes on," he said. I stood at the foot of the bed and said,
"Get dressed."
"Don't look," he said.
"I'm not looking."
"But you're looking at me," he said.
"But I'm not looking at you."
But I couldn't explain it to him, so I turned and looked at the door while he struggled into his pants.
"You can look now."
He had everything zipped and buttoned, and just that had taken some of the raw terror out of his eyes. I cut his ankles free, sheathed the knife, and helped him to his feet. He jerked away from me, then almost fell because the ankles had been tied too tight for too long, and he didn't have all the feeling back. Only my hand on his arm kept him upright.
"You need to walk a little with help before you can run," I said.
He let me help him to the door, but he wouldn't look at me. His first reaction had been that of a child, grateful to be saved, wanting to hold on to someone, but his second reaction was older. He was embarrassed now. Embarrassed at what had happened, and probably at me seeing him nearly naked. He was 14, a trembling age between child and adult. Somehow, I think he'd been younger when he went into the cell than when he came out. Edward met us in the hallway with Becca held in his arms. She looked pale and sick. Bruises had already started blooming on her face. But it was her hand that made me want to cry. That tiny hand that I'd held only days ago while Edward and I swung her in the air. Three of the fingers looked crippled, at unnatural angles. They were swelling, the skin discolored. It was early for that, which meant they were bad breaks and wouldn't heal easily. She said,
"Anita, you came to save me too."
Her voice was high and thin. It made my throat tight.
"Yeah, sweetie, I came to save you too."
Peter and Edward stood staring at each other. It was Edward that reached out first, just his hand, because the arm was underneath Becca's legs. Peter took that hand and hugged them both. His fingers hovered over Becca's hand, and fresh tears fell down his face, but there was no sobbing now, just tears so quiet you wouldn't have known he was crying if you hadn't seen them.
"She'll be all right," Edward said.
Peter looked up at him as if he wasn't sure he believed, but he wanted to. But he stepped away from them, rubbed the tears from his face with his hands.
"Can I have a gun?"
I opened my mouth to say no, but Edward spoke first.
"Give him your fire star, Anita."
"You're kidding," I said.
"I've seen him shoot. He can handle it."
I'd been following Edward's orders for a while. He was usually right, but...
"If we go down, I want him armed."
Edward looked at me,
and the weight in his eyes was enough. He didn't want Peter and Becca taken again. If he put a gun in Peter's hand, they'd kill him, not torture him. If the worst happened, Edward had decided how the boy would go out, and God help me, I agreed. I pulled the gun out of the band of my jeans. Why the Firestar? Smallest grip. I handed it to Peter, feeling vaguely like a child molester myself, or maybe a corrupter. It holds 9 if you carry one in the chamber. It's only holding 8. Safety's here. He took the gun and popped the clip out to check it, then looked vaguely embarrassed.
Ted says to always check if something's loaded.
He popped the clip back in, put a round in the chamber so it was ready to fire. Try not to shoot any of us, I said. He clicked the safety on.
I won't.
Looking into his eyes, I believed him.
I want to go home, Becca said.
We're going home, honey, Edward said. Edward led the way around the corner, still carrying Becca. Peter went next, and I brought up the rear. I didn't burst anyone's bubble, but I knew we were a long way from safe. We had Simon and the rest of his men to get through, not to mention Harold and Newt and the local guys. Where were Russell and Amanda? I was really hoping to see them before we left. I'd promised Peter that she would never hurt him again. I always keep my promises. Chapter 60. The hallway spilled out into a large open space. Edward stopped, and Peter and I did too. Becca was still being carried, so she didn't have much choice. I kept an eye on our back trail and waited for Edward to decide what to do. I couldn't see how big the open space was, so I figured it was big enough for Edward to worry about us being out in that much open. He finally moved slowly forward, hugging the left-hand wall. When I could see the room clearly, I realized why he'd hesitated. It wasn't just this huge open space. There were 3 tunnels leading off to the right, dark mouths where anything might lurk, like Simon and the rest of his men. But there was a 4th opening with stairs leading up. Up was what we needed. I walked with my back to the solid wall behind me, trying to keep an eye on the hall we'd come out of and the 3 tunnels to the right. I left the stairs to Edward. The stairway was narrow, barely broad enough for 2 slender people to walk abreast. It wound upward and had a sharp angle at the top, a blind corner. I kept watching behind us, because I knew that if shooters came up behind us and in front of us at the same time, we were dead. It was a perfect place for an ambush. Peter seemed to feel the tension, because he moved closer to Edward, almost touching him as they moved up the stairs. We were about 3/4 of the way up to that 1st blind corner, when Edward hesitated, staring down at the steps. Peter took 1 extra step. Edward hit him with his shoulder, knocking him back. He dropped Becca to the steps, still holding her good arm, trying to save her from the full fall. I think if he'd just dropped Becca, he might have gotten them all out of harm's way, but that last effort cost him the second he needed. I saw a blur of movement, and there was a wooden stake sticking out of Edward's back. I started to go to him, but he said,
"Up the stairs, now! Shoot them!"
I didn't ask questions. I went up the last few steps as fast as I could go and threw myself around the corner on my side and was shooting down the hallway before I saw what I was shooting at. Harold, Russell, Newt, and Amanda were running down another level of stairs. I fired up into them, fighting the angle to make the spray pattern hit them. The 3 men went down, but Amanda turned and darted back around the corner they'd come from. I made sure the men weren't getting up, firing into their down bodies. Then I got to my feet and ran up the stairs after her. I crouched at the corner, but the stairs were empty. Fuck. I didn't dare pursue her and leave the kids and Edward alone. I went back down the steps and slipped on blood so that I ended up sitting down hard on the steps. My elbow hit Harold's body, and the body grunted. I put the barrel of the gun against his chest as his eyes fluttered open.
"Didn't make the ambush sight in time. Simon's going to be pissed," he said, and the tone of his voice said he was hurting.
"I don't think you have to worry about Simon anymore, Harold. You're not going to be around to answer to him."
"Never approved of hurting kids," he said.
"But you didn't stop it," I said. He took a breath, and that seemed to hurt, too.
"Simon called someone on the radio. Said he'd failed. Said they needed to clean up the mess. I think they're coming to kill us all."
"Who's coming?" He opened his mouth, and I think he'd have told me, but his breath ran out in a long sigh. I felt for the pulse in his neck, but it wasn't there. I'd known he was dead, but still, you check. I checked Russell and Newt just to be sure, but they were dead. I actually left everyone's guns because I just couldn't carry anymore. I heard voices as I neared the bend that would take me back to Edward. Fuck! Then I recognized one of the voices. It was Olaf. I came around the corner and found Olaf and Bernardo kneeling by Edward. Peter was sitting on the steps holding Becca. She was crying. He wasn't. He was staring at Edward, face white with shock. Bernardo spotted me first.
Are they dead?
I nodded. Russell, Newt, and Harold. Amanda got away. Peter's eyes flicked to me, and they were huge and dark in his pale, pale face. The bruised mouth stood out against his skin like it was makeup, too bright to be real. Edward made a small sound, and Peter turned back to him.
I'm sorry, Ted, he said. I'm sorry.
It's all right, Pete. Just next time follow my lead better.
His voice was strained, but Peter seemed to take heart from talk of a next time. I wasn't so sure. Olaf and Bernardo had turned him so that you could see the sharpened end of the stake that had pierced his chest. It was upper chest, close to the left shoulder. It had missed the heart or he'd be dead, but it could have pierced the sack around the heart, and blood could be spilling into that sack as we watched. Or it could have missed it entirely. It was high enough up that it had probably missed the lungs. Probably. How'd you know that they were coming? I asked.
Heard them.
And his voice reminded me of Harold's, pain-stressed. I was suddenly cold, and it wasn't the temperature. I started to kneel by them all, but Edward said,
Watch our backs.
So I stood up, put my back to the wall, and let my peripheral vision try to keep track of both up and down the stairs. But my eyes kept going back to him.
Was he dying? Please, God, not like this.
It wasn't just Edward. It was the look on Peter's face. If Edward died, Peter would blame himself. The boy was having a bad enough night. That kind of guilt he did not need.
Give me your t-shirt, Olaf said.
I looked at him.
We need to pack the wound and keep the stake from moving around. We can't remove it here. It's too close to his heart. He will need a hospital.
I agreed with that. Someone else watch for bad guys while I undress. Bernardo stood up and took my place at the wall. I noticed there was a blade sticking out of his cast like a spearhead. The blade was stained black with blood. I pulled off my t-shirt and handed it to Olaf. He'd already stripped down to his black Kevlar vest, shoving his own shirt around the wound.
Do you need mine? Peter asked.
Yes,
Olaf said. Peter moved Becca forward on his lap and took off his shirt. His upper body was thin and pale. He was tall, but the rest of him hadn't caught up. Olaf used pieces of Bernardo's shirt to hold the makeshift bandage in place. The wound looked terrible, but it wasn't bleeding much. I didn't know if that was a good sign or a bad one.
We caught the other half of your ambush on its way to the stairs, Bernardo said.
I wondered why there weren't more, I said. I remembered what Harold had said. Before Harold died, he said that Simon called someone, told them he'd failed and they needed to clean up the mess. Does that mean what I think it means? Edward looked up at me, as Olaf used more shirt strips to bind his left arm tight so he wouldn't move it and risk jarring the stake into something vital.
They'll kill everything they find.
His voice was almost normal, only slightly breathy, a touch tight.
They'll burn the place to ash. Maybe they even salt the earth.
I think that last was the wound talking, but you never know with Edward. Olaf lifted Edward to his feet, but the height difference was too much. Edward couldn't keep his arm over the big man's shoulders.
Bernardo will have to help you.
No.
Anita can do it.
Olaf opened his mouth to argue, I think, but Edward said, Bernardo only has one good arm.
He needs that to shoot.
Olaf closed his mouth into a tight line, but he handed Edward over to me. Edward's arm went around my shoulders. I put my left arm around his waist. We tried a couple of steps, and it worked okay. Olaf led the way. I came next with Edward, then Peter, carrying Becca wrapped around his body like a sad little monkey. Bernardo brought up the rear. Olaf looked at the bodies of the dead men as he passed. He spoke without looking back at me.
You did this?
Yeah. I'd have usually come up with something sarcastic like, You see anyone else? But I was too worried about Edward to waste the effort. Sweat had popped out on his face, as if it was taking a lot to keep going. Trouble was, a fireman's carry would disturb the stake, and if any of us could carry him just in his arms, it was Olaf, but it would mean not being able to shoot. We needed the gun. You okay, Edward? I asked. He swallowed before he said,
"Fine."
I didn't believe him, but I didn't ask again. This was probably as good as it was going to get for a while. Edward tried to turn and say something to the kids, but it hurt, and I had to turn for him, moving us both to face backwards.
"Cover Becca's eyes, Peter."
Peter had Becca bury her face against his shoulder and kept his hand pressed to the back of her head. He didn't have the fire star in his hands. I wondered where it was, but not enough to ask. I turned Edward back around, and we started up the stairs again. Olaf was almost at the next bend in the stairs when he stopped. He was looking down at the steps. I froze and said, "No one move."
"Is it a trap?" Edward asked.
"No,"
Olaf said. I saw it then. Thin rivulets of blood sliding down the steps towards us. It snaked around Olaf's feet and dripped its way toward Edward and me. Peter wasn't that far behind us. He asked,
"What is that?"
"Blood," Olaf said.
"Please tell me that this is your handiwork, Olaf," I said.
"No,"
he said. I watched the blood flow around my Nikes and knew that our problems had just gotten worse. Chapter 61. I leaned Edward up against the wall. He wanted me free to shoot if Olaf told me to. Olaf got to scout ahead and see what the problem was. He vanished around that corner, and I pressed myself to the wall and gave the briefest of looks ahead. The stairs ended just up ahead. The electric lights showed a cave, I think. The lights glistened on blood and bodies. Olaf backed up and came down to us again.
"I can see the exit."
"What are the bodies?"
"Riker's men."
"What killed them?"
"I think it is our murderous beast, but there is no other way out. The other entrance has been blocked by an explosion. We must go out this way."
I figured if the murderous beast was up there waiting for us, Olaf would have been more excited. So I went back to Edward. His skin was the color of bad paste. His eyes were closed. They opened when I touched him, but they were brighter than they should have been. "We're almost out," I said. He didn't say anything, just let me settle his arm over my shoulder. He was still holding on to me, but every step we took, my arm around his waist was taking more and more of his weight. "Hold on, Edward. Just a little farther." His head jerked as if he'd just heard me, but his feet kept moving with me. We were going to make it, all of us. The blood got thicker the farther up we walked. Edward slipped in it, and I had to catch him and barely managed to keep us both standing. But it was a sudden movement, and he let out a small sound of pain. Shit. "Watch your step, Peter," I said. "It's slippery." Olaf was waiting for us at the bodies. There were only three of them. One was a man I didn't recognize, but I recognized the gun near his body. He was one of Simon's men. Simon was lying in a pool of blood and darker fluids. The entire lower chest, stomach, abdomen were open. His intestines trailed out onto the cave floor, but his eyes were still blinking upward, still alive. The third body was Amanda, and she was still moving too. But Olaf had her covered, so I kept my attention on Simon. He smiled up at us.
"At least I killed the Undertaker."
"He's not nearly as dead as you are," I said.
"You're all dead, bitch."
"We know you invited company," I said. His eyes looked uncertain.
"Fuck you."
His hand inched towards his gun that was still lying beside him. Gutted, dying, in more pain than I could imagine, and he tried to go for his gun. I stepped on his hand, pinning it to the earth. Harder to do than normal with Edward hanging on me, but I managed. "Peter, you and Becca go up with Bernardo to the front of the cave." Peter didn't argue. He just carried Becca past us, Bernardo trailing behind. I pointed the gun barrel at Simon's head. I couldn't leave him behind, because I didn't trust him at my back. Even this wounded, I wasn't willing to take the chance.
"I hope the monster guts you, bitch."
"That's Ms. Bitch to you," I said, and pulled the trigger. A short burst, but more shots echoed mine. I whirled, gun up, and found Peter standing over Amanda's body. He emptied the fire star into her body while I watched. Olaf was just watching him do it. I looked for Bernardo and found him holding Becca near the cave mouth. Edward started to slide to his knees. I knelt with him, trying to keep him upright. He whispered,
"The kids. Out. Get them. Out."
And he fainted. Olaf was there without me asking.
He lifted Edward in his arms like a child. If the monster came now, we all had our hands full. Shit. Peter had run out of bullets, but he was still squeezing the trigger over and over and over. I went to him. Peter. Peter, she's dead. You killed her. Ease down. He didn't seem to hear me. I touched his hands, tried to lift the gun from him. He jerked away, violently, eyes wild. He kept dry-firing into the woman's body. I shoved him back against the rock wall, hard, one arm across his throat, the other pinning his hands still wrapped around the fire star. His eyes were wide and frightened, but he looked at me. Peter, she's dead. You can't kill her any more dead than she already is. His voice shook when he said,
I wanted her to hurt.
She did hurt. Being torn apart is a bad way to die. He shook his head.
It's not enough.
No, I said. It isn't enough. But you killed her, Peter. That's as good as revenge gets. Once you kill them, there isn't any more. I took the fire star out of his hands and he let me. I tried to hug him, but he pushed me away, then walked away. The time for that kind of comfort was past. But there were other kinds of comfort. Some of them came from the barrel of a gun. There is some comfort in killing that which has hurt you, but it is cold comfort. It'll destroy things inside of you that the original pain wouldn't have harmed. Sometimes it's not a question of whether a piece of your soul is going to go missing, only which piece it's going to be. Peter carried Becca. Olaf carried Edward. Bernardo and I took the lead. We searched the spring darkness with our guns, back and forth, back and forth. Nothing moved. There was just the sound of wind in the tall line of sage bushes that bordered the back of the cave. The air felt so good against my face, and I realized that I'd not really expected to get out. Not alive. Pessimism. It wasn't like me. Bernardo led the way back to circle the house. We'd try for Edward's car, but we wanted to make sure no one or no thing was waiting to eat us when we went for the car. Olaf went second, carrying a very still Edward. I was praying hard that he'd be okay, though strangely it felt odd to pray to God for Edward, as if I were praying in the wrong direction. Peter and Becca were just ahead of me. He stumbled as we headed into the thicker brush. He had to be tired, but I couldn't afford to carry Becca. I needed to have my hands free to fight. I felt the prickling brush of magic. I called, Guys, something's out here. Everyone stopped and started searching the darkness.
What did you see? Olaf asked.
Nothing, but something out here is doing magic. Olaf made a noise in his throat like he didn't believe me. Then the first wave of fear washed over us. So much fear that it closed the throat, sent the heart thundering, made the palms of your hands sweat. Becca started struggling violently in Peter's arms. I took two steps to help Peter control her, but she struggled free, fell to the ground, and ran like a rabbit into the brush. Peter yelled, Becca! And went after her. Peter? Becca! Oh, shit! I ran into the brush after them. What else could I do? I heard them just up ahead, crashing through the brush, Peter calling Becca's name. I had a sense of movement to my right, and I saw something. It was bigger than a man, and even by moonlight you could see it was different colors. I fired into it as it opened a huge, razored mouth, but the claw kept coming towards me as if the bullets were nothing. The closed claw slammed into my head. It knocked me off my feet, and I hit the ground hard. Darkness swirled across my vision, and when I could see again, the thing was right above me. I kept my finger on the trigger until it clicked empty. The monster never hesitated. It filled my vision with a face that was almost bird-like, and I had a moment to think it was pretty before it hit me again. And there was nothing but darkness. Chapter 62. I woke instantly, my skin jumping with a rush of magic that left me gasping. My body strained, writhing as the power rode over and through my body in a burning surge that just kept growing. My hands and legs strained against the chains that held me down. Chains? I turned and stared at my wrists, head still thrashing, my body jerking as the power roared through me. My arms and legs jerked, not because I was struggling against the chains, but as a reaction to the power. The magic began to fade, leaving my breath coming in pants. One thing I knew, if I didn't get my breathing under control, I was going to hyperventilate. Passing out again would be bad. Heaven knew what I'd wake up to a second time. I concentrated on my breathing, forcing myself to be calm and take deep, even, normal breaths. It's hard to be totally panic-stricken when you're doing breathing exercises. It poured a false calm over my body and my mind, but it let me think, which was good. I was lying on my back, chained to a smooth stone surface. There was a curve of cave wall behind me and a ceiling lost to sight in the darkness above. I'd have loved to believe that Bernardo and Olaf had rescued me and we were back in the cave entrance, but the chain sort of ruined that pleasant thought. This cave was much taller, and without looking it just felt bigger. Firelight bounced in orange shadows along the cave, like being in a ball of darkness and gold light. I finally turned my head to the right and let myself see what was there. At first I thought it was Pinotl, Itzpapalotl's human servant. I had a few seconds of cursing myself for believing her when she said she didn't know about the monster. Then I realized it wasn't him. It looked like him. Same square, chiseled face, dark, rich skin, and the black hair cut long and oddly square. But this man was narrow through the shoulders, thin, and there was no air of command to him. He was also wearing a pair of loose-fitting shorts instead of the nifty clothes that Pinotl wore. There was a smooth, rounded stone like the one at the obsidian butterfly. There was a body draped over that stone. Foreshortened legs and arms, short dark hair, and for a moment I thought it was Nicky Bacco. Then I saw the naked chest more clearly, and it was Paulina, Nicky's wife. There was a hole under her ribs like a great gaping mouth. They'd torn out her heart. The unknown man stood there holding the heart in his hands, above his head like an offering. His eyes looked black in the uncertain light. He lowered his arms, walking towards me with the heart cupped in his hands. His hands were so thick with blood that it looked like he was wearing red gloves. There were four men standing at attention around the altar. They were wearing some sort of soft leather on their bodies, hoods up and covering them from head to foot almost. There was something wrong with what they were wearing, but my eyes couldn't make sense of it, and I had other more immediate problems than what people were wearing. I was still wearing the Kevlar vest and all the rest of my clothes. If they meant to take my heart, they'd have taken the clothes. It was a very comforting thought as the man, the priest, walked towards me with the heart in his hands. He held the heart over my chest and began to chant in a language that sounded like Spanish but wasn't. Blood dripped from the heart, splatted on the vest. It made me jump. The calm of the breathing exercises was wearing off. I did not want him to touch me with that thing. It wasn't even logic, fear of some spell or magic. It was pure revulsion. I did not want to be touched by a heart that had just been torn out of someone's body. I've put my share of stakes through hearts. I've even cut a few out for burning. But somehow this was different. Maybe it was being chained and helpless, or maybe it was Paulina's body lying limp over the altar looking like a broken doll. The only time I'd met her, she'd been so strong, threatening me with a gun. But lots of people had done that. Edward used to do that all the time. Starting out a relationship on the end of a gun didn't mean you couldn't be friends down the road. Unless one of you died. No friendship now. No nothing for Paulina. The man ended the chant and began to lower the heart towards me. I strained against the chains, though I knew it was useless, and I said, "Don't touch me with that." It sounded sure and strong, but if he understood English, I couldn't tell it because he just kept lowering his bloody hands closer and closer. He laid the heart on my chest, and I was almost as grateful that the Kevlar kept me from feeling that thing next to my skin as I'd been for the extra protection from bullets earlier. The heart lay on my chest like so much meat. There was no magic to it. It was just dead. Then the heart took a breath, or that's what it looked like. The skin rose and fell. It sat on my chest, naked and attached to nothing, and pulsed. I was suddenly aware of my own heartbeat. The moment I noticed my heartbeat, Paulina's heart stuttered, then began to beat in time with mine. And the moment the rhythms were shared, I could hear a second heartbeat. Except that Paulina's heart had no blood to pump, no chest to resonate in. It should have been a pale sound compared to the real thing, but it was a solid, pulsing beat. It was as if the sound reached through the vest, through my skin, my ribs, and pierced my heart. The pain was sharp and immediate, stealing my breath, bowing my spine. "Hold her!" the man yelled. The men who'd been standing by the altar ran to me, strong hands pressing on my legs, pinning my shoulders. My spine tried to bow with the pain, and a third set of hands pressed down on my thighs, three of them pinning me to the stone, forcing me to ride the pain and not struggle. Paulina's heart was beating faster and faster, speeding towards some grand climax. My heart thundered against my ribs, as if it were trying to tear loose of the tissue. It was as if a fist were beating on the inside of my chest, trying to smash its way out. I couldn't breathe, as if all of my chest was caught up in the frantic race, and there was no time for anything else. The pain was centered in my chest, but it spread down my arms, my legs, filled my head until I thought that it might not be my heart that exploded. It might be the top of my head. I could feel the two hearts like lovers separated by a wall, tearing it down between them until they would be able to touch. There was a moment when I felt them touch, felt the thick, wet sides of the two organs slide into each other. Maybe it was just the pain. Then the heart stopped like a person caught in mid-motion, and my heart stopped with it. For a breathless moment, my heart sat in my body and did nothing, as if waiting. Then it gave one beat, then another, and I drew air into my lungs in a frantic rush, and as soon as I had air, I screamed. Then I lay there, still listening to my heartbeat, feeling the pain begin to fade like the memory of a nightmare. Minutes later, the pain was gone. My body didn't even hurt. In fact, I felt energized. Wonderful. The heart on my chest had shriveled into a gray, used-up piece of flesh. It wasn't recognizable as a heart, just a dry ball smaller than my palm. I blinked up and saw the face of the man holding my shoulders down. I'm sure he'd been looking down at me for a while, but I hadn't seen him, or hadn't understood what I was seeing. He wore a mask over his face. Only his lips, eyes, and ears showed through the thin covering. His neck was bare, then a ragged bow neck of the same material of the mask covered him. I think part of me knew what I was looking at before the rest of me would accept it. It wasn't until I turned my head as far as I could to one side and saw the hands that I knew what he was wearing. The empty hands bunched at his wrists like limp, fleshy lace. It was human skin. I'd finally found out what had happened to some of the skin the flayed ones had lost. The eyes that stared out of that horrible thing were brown and very human. I looked down the line of my body and found that the other two men holding my legs wore the same thing, but the skins weren't all the same colors. One dark, two light. The chests had thick cords sewn across it where the breasts and nipples would have been, so there was no clue to whether the skin had been male or female. The first man I'd seen stepped forward.
"How do you feel?"
His English was heavily accented but clear. I just looked at him for a second. He had to be kidding. How am I supposed to feel? I just woke up in a cave where you just performed a human sacrifice. I glanced at the men still holding me down. I'm being held down by men wearing flayed human skin suits. How the hell am I supposed to feel?
I'm asking after your bodily health. Nothing more, he said.
I started to say something else sarcastic, but stopped and really thought about his question. How did I feel? Actually, I felt good. I remembered that rush of energy and well-being that had spread over me when the spell finished. It was still there. I felt better than I'd felt in days. If it hadn't required human sacrifice, it would have been a great medical treatment. I feel okay.
No pain in the head?
No.
Good, he said.
He motioned and the skin guys moved away from me. They moved to stand against the wall by the fourth man who hadn't been needed to hold me down. They stood there like good soldiers, waiting for their next orders. I turned back to look at the other guy. Everyone in the room was scary, but at least he wasn't wearing someone else's skin.
What did you do to me?
We have saved your life. Our master's creature was overzealous. There was bleeding in your head. We needed you alive.
I thought about that. You used Paulina's life force to heal me.
Yes.
I'm glad to be alive, honest. I looked past him at Paulina's body lying broken and forgotten. But she didn't volunteer to trade her life for mine, did she?
Nikki Bako began to suspect what price he would have to pay for our master's blessing. She was a hostage to make sure he came to this, our last meeting, the man said.
Let me guess. He didn't show, I said.
He no longer answers our master's call.
Apparently Ramirez had taken my advice of having Leonora Evans do some sort of magical barrier around Nikki so he couldn't contact his master. Good to know it was working, but you try to do the right thing and it ends up getting someone else killed. Why is that always the way it works? But I admit that I was happier for me than sorry for Paulina. Not about her trading her life for mine,
But if Nikki was being protected by magic, then he and the police were on their way. All I had to do was stall and keep them from doing whatever it was they had planned for me.
So when Nikki didn't show up, you didn't need to keep her alive.
My voice sounded calm, but better than